It's 10 o'clock here in the Inland Northwest. I'm Jim Tevenin. This is SPR Classical, and it's time for From the Studio. Very special presentation today. The Spokane Symphony, justly lauded for wonderful work in the orchestral world, with the Masterworks concerts, the last one of which is still resonating with many of us, taking place last weekend. But there's another aspect to the players in the orchestra. There's another aspect to music, of course, and that's chamber music. The Spokane Symphony for any number of years has sponsored a three-concert chamber soiree series, and we are going to have the second of those coming up tomorrow evening and Thursday evening, both at the Marie Antoinette Ballroom and the Davenport Hotel downtown. SpokaneSymphony.org is a place to look for more information and tickets. And while you consider that, we're going to consider talking a little bit about this program coming up. Two very special guests in the studio with us today. The principal bassoon of the orchestra, Lynn Feller Marshall. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Jim.
And Clinton Webb, principal horn of the orchestra as well. Welcome again, Clinton.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And it's a delight to have you both. We're going to talk chamber music here. Everybody, of course, knows about the spectacle that is symphonic music. And you've got the conductor, you've got the sometimes a really massive orchestra, maybe even chorus added. But there's another kind of music entirely that's much more intimate, that is involving fewer musicians, that is this elusive thing called chamber music, music of a smaller scale, and with its own repertoire and with its own wonders. So let's explore that a little bit here. So, Lynn, first of all, your perspective is that of one who's been with the orchestra for some time.
Quite a while.
Where did you start? Call to mind.
I started as principal in 1994. So quite some time ago. Mm-hmm. 2 years before that, I came back and forth from wherever else I was living as third bassoon. Had to resign because of missing so much work in New York. And then
that's
I
a commute and a half.
It was a commute and a half. The principal moved back to chair three, and then I won his job. So we traded.
All right. Very good. And Clinton, you are a much more recent arrival here on our shores. And you've been with the orchestra. I know my sense of time just evades me in cases like this. And
me too. Don't worry about it.
You'll probably say a number. I say, oh, really? So how long?
This is my third season with the orchestra. Right. I joined in 2023.
Well, it's a delight to have you both here with us today. And Lynn, shall I start with you? What part has chamber music played, or where did you get started with chamber music? Let's go that way.
Actually, I would have to say I fell in love with music through chamber music. I was in high school, and my best friend played horn. She had a driver's license. I did not. So she drove us from our relatively rural suburban area to downtown Rochester, New York. And we participated in a scholarship woodwind quintet program at the Hochstein School of Music, where, ironically, my son now teaches.
Ah, the circle is complete.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And Clinton, how about you? Where's your start?
Yeah, what a great question. Interestingly, I was more of a rock music person in high school, but I like to think that my predilection for playing chamber music comes from there. You know, you get in a garage with four other friends and just sort of figure out how to do it together with nobody guiding you. It's just four musicians trying to figure something out. And getting to play this type of music with my colleagues here at the symphony is just such a joy, because you all have such a legitimate artistic voice. You're able to just express whatever you express, and you can react to your colleague in real time instead of being mediated through a larger ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Right. And let's see now, in terms of these performances, Lynn, have you done many of the soirees?
I have. Everything from duos, and lots of those, particularly with my husband, John, on cello, and Luke Bakken on bassoon or contrabassoon, all the way up through, I believe we did a nonet 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
kind of neat thing about this series is that this is a musician-driven series. We asked for it. In fact, we really insisted that we would really love to start such a series. And it was wonderful because we did. And mm-hmm. we've been doing it ever since. It's been 20, probably almost 28 years now, I think, that we've been doing something like this.
And there's a sense of it coming home as well. Because the, if I'm not mistaken, the Marie Antoinette was, if not the first, then among the first venues.
It was among the first, yes.
And now, after many iterations and experiments and what have you, we're back at the Marie Antoinette. What's it like to play in that space? Whoever wants to.
It's a really beautiful space. I enjoy playing there. It's you know, it's sort of on the smaller side, so it's I would say really evocative of what chamber music, the type of music we're playing, a wind serenade. It's the type of room that music would have been played in, sort of historically speaking, you know, a larger ballroom, not necessarily a concert hall, so to speak. So in a certain sense, the audience is getting almost a historically informed performance in terms of the venue.
Right. And, you know, in terms of the venue and the origins of a lot of this music, It was for people's dinnertime entertainment, those who could afford it, for the composer, for the musicians and what have you. That was their radio. That was their Spotify, if you will. And so that does take it back to a scale also, and certainly a moment with the people chewing and swallowing and drinking and what have you. Tell me about, if you can, some chamber music experiences that you think may have been formative for you, or whether that's in terms of a series that you've been a part of, or specific performances that just have importance for you looking back.
Yeah, I'd love to share one. When I was in at Indiana University doing a degree in horn, I actually had a class where we just read wind octets the whole semester. Really a joy. It was with Michael McCraw, who was one of the first historical bassoon players to sort of hit the scene. Really interesting guy. And the most memorable aspect of that was the wind octet, which I might say more about later, was a genre of music that was very familiar to people in the late 18th century, early 19th century. And there were little groups that would play in cities. They were sort of the garage bands of the time, if you will. And there were a lot of arrangements of famous music for wind octet written in that time. And as our final concert for that class, we played a contemporaneous arrangement of Beethoven 7 for wind octet. Just 8 wind players trying to hack our way through Beethoven 7. It was really a lift. And the craziest part was the arranger from decided for some reason to set the first and last movement in G instead of in the original key of A, which he seemed to think would make it easier, but it really made it a lot harder.
Not so much. Well, that's another aspect of chamber music, that it is taking larger, in some cases, it is taking larger format music and bringing it down to more of a community ensemble or a school ensemble or a home ensemble even. Lynn, any formative times with chamber music for you?
Honestly, probably the same program that I mentioned, because it was so early on. I had to make the decision, do I pursue visual art? Do I pursue horses? What do I do with myself?
That's pretty varied. And that's quite the choice.
It was pretty varied. And I had parents that were very supportive, so I probably could have pursued any of those things. And it was my junior year that we just randomly heard about this scholarship woodwind quintet program. And so when my friend and I both auditioned and both made it, it was pretty life-changing. It was my junior year of high school that I decided, you know what? I love music. I don't think I could get through the rest of my life unless I pursued music actively.
All right. Well, formative it was then, absolutely.
Yeah.
What's the most unusual either venue that you've played chamber music in, or perhaps the most unusual combination of instruments that's been a part of one of that size or that scale of performance?
I don't know if I would say unusual combination, but I was in a trio for many years. It was one bassoon and two clarinets, originally styled after the basset horn serenades of Mozart. And we played all over the place. So very exciting, from shifting floors, because the building was that old, to regular, beautiful stages in concert halls. One of the most frightening was probably playing live on New York Public Radio, because that was just a really kind of just so much adrenaline. And everything was timed down to the second.
Of course, yeah, yeah. We do that around here, don't we? Well, sometimes we do. Clinton, any?
Sure. Astute listeners to the symphony who have read my bio may recall that I actually have an undergrad and master's degree in tuba before I started a second life as a horn player. And for my master's recital on the tuba, I played a piece for trombone, quartet, and solo tuba by Henri Tomasi called Être ou ne pas être, to be or not to be. It's this very trippy French evocation of the Hamlet, famous Hamlet soliloquy for solo tuba and four trombones. And it was really an interesting experience and enjoyable to get to. As a tuba player, you didn't get to play a lot of chamber music. Obviously, now that I play the horn, I'm substantially more blessed with opportunities to play chamber music with my colleagues. I also played in a tuba, horn, and piano trio. There's a couple pieces written by Alec Wilder for the tuba and the horn. So that was sort of one of my first gateway drugs to horn playing, if you will, was playing with a horn player on the tuba and thinking, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, there's something that's magical, too, about Alec Wilder's writing difficult to identify exactly what are we talking about in terms of influence, in terms of genre, in terms of that stuff.
Yeah, and one of the things I love most about Wilder, and the reason those specific pieces exist, is because he would just write music for friends. It was apropos of nothing at all. He would visit a friend, stay at their house, and, oh, you play horn and you play tuba. Oh, maybe I'll write a piece. Why not? And he would sort of leave it under their pillow as he left the house the next day or something. So for a long period of time, people were still digging up these really strange, Wilder chamber pieces for unusual combinations of instruments that someone had just gotten as a gift and thought, this is funny. And then turns out it's a really nice piece, actually. So I look forward to playing some of his music on horn sometime in the near future, hopefully.
All right. Let's focus a little bit on the program here. I'm talking with Clinton Webb and Lynn Feller-Marshall from the Spokane Symphony, who are both part of the Chamber Soiree program that happens tomorrow night and Thursday night at the Davenport Hotel. And we'll get to your piece specifically in a second here, but walk us through the logistics of this, getting from, okay, I'd like to play in the chamber soiree, to coming on stage with your music and playing.
They're actually quite well planned. We submit suggestions for the following season. So we have already submitted suggestions by December 31st, for the 2026-27 season. And we make a huge spreadsheet of all of our suggestions. And then James Lowe thinks and considers and possibly reconsiders and comes up with programs. Mm-hmm. And the caveat is that people need to have already agreed to perform these pieces. So no sudden drafting and no last-minute shocks. Yeah, if you were planning to be out of town, for example, during Chamber Soiree number one, and suddenly someone comes to you the week before and says, oh, yeah, you're going to play this quartet next week, right? That can be a problem. So they're pretty well planned out, which is wonderful, quite far in advance.
Right. And in terms of, because all of you are wicked busy with various things, not the least of which are symphony rehearsals, how does the preparation work out in terms of getting together for rehearsals?
The symphony actually makes it pretty easy for us. They add to our calendar some hold dates for rehearsals and help facilitate finding space, usually at the Fox, to rehearse. So I really have to say, as far as like a chamber program in an orchestra, but outside of the auspices of an orchestral performance, I really think the symphony is doing a great job making it easy for us to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Good. Good. Let's take a look at the program here. It begins with the music of Luigi Boccherini, similar to something I played earlier in the program today, one of his quintets, a quintet in C major. And this is one of those quintets where the fifth instrument is another cello. And so we'll hear Matej Volsky and Jason Moody, violinists. Nick Harper joins as violist, and the two cellists are Roberta Battelli and Louise Butler. Moving on from there to the 20th century and music of Claude Debussy, a wonderfully exotic, wonderful piece, the Sonata for Flute, Harp, and Viola, one of my favorite Debussy pieces. Then another 20th century work from English composer Malcolm Arnold, his duo for flute and viola, played by Jennifer Slaughter, flutist, and Sarah Bass, violist. And I should mention on the Debussy, the Julia Pike is the flutist, Erica Tregenza Moody is the harpist, and Nick Harper stays on stage to play viola. Which brings us to the grand finale, which is played by my guests in the studio, and with help from oboists Keith Thomas and Sheila Armstrong, and clarinetists Chip Phillips and Daniel Cotter. Your fellow bassoonist, Luke Bakken-Lynn, will be a part of the program. And Clinton, you'll be joined by Charles Karshny on horn. So tell us about the piece. Tell us about the piece and what we can expect from that.
Sure. The C minor octet is really one of Mozart's great masterworks and very unusual for its genre. The wind octet in that time period, as you mentioned earlier, really was dinner music, but specifically outdoor dinner music. In German, it was called Feldharmonie, which is a cognate in English for field harmony, field music. So if you were a rich person having a dinner party out of doors,
a wedding reception, something like that.
This, you have to remember, was fairly early in the development of the violin. Classical bows and classical strings just didn't make quite as much noise. So your options for outdoor radio were basically either a whole mess of violins or fewer people who made more noise. And oboes and bassoons and horns make more noise. So the wind octet is part of this larger genre, and most of the pieces are called serenades, specifically because we were meant to serenade the hoi polloi at the event. Mozart, for whatever reason, decided to take this genre somewhat more seriously, though, instead of writing pieces that were just sort of light hors d'oeuvres for the audience to listen to off and on while they're having dinner. The C minor octet is essentially an entire Mozart symphony in miniature. Four movements, fully formed musical ideas, tons of interesting counterpoint, especially in the minuet and trio, which is has four different canons, the last one being a double canon with the second canon voice in inversion. Really an incredible contrapuntal feat of engineering. It's a really nice piece to end with because it really gives us as wind players an opportunity to make a fully formed musical statement on our own without needing to be in a full symphony orchestra.
Mm-hmm. And Lynn, how about your response to the piece?
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. It's a symphony, but really fascinating because you can hear every voice of that symphony, unlike a large, full, even the late symphonies of Mozart. You can hear so much in this piece with only eight players and four distinct tone qualities, as opposed to 10 different tone qualities. Mm-hmm. Probably my favorite movement, ironically, I don't think I would say this about too many pieces, are, as Clinton said, the minuet and trio. They're just, I almost picture Mozart just smiling when he writes this trio, because he's just, he's having a ball. He's brilliant. He knows it, and he's enjoying it.
Yeah, look at the calculus I can do.
Well, yeah. It comes from a point in his life where he was on top of the musical world, of course. And but at the same time, it has its darker moments.
Yeah, it's quite unusual for a wind serenade in that three of the four movements are in a minor key. Mm-hmm. This is music, even Mozart's other wind serenades, typically hang out in major keys because they were meant to be played out of doors at a reception. And even though Mozart was writing this music with a greater degree of compositional acuity than some of the other composers writing this music at that time were choosing to do, he was still cognizant of the fact that the music would be played at an event most often where they would expect it to be sort of listenable and easy and not too stressful. And this piece is really quite, Sturm und Drang. It's very heavy and intense for most of it, except for the slow movement, which is just a typical Mozart, crying while smiling type of andante. It's extraordinarily beautiful in E-flat major.
It is. And yet it's not slow in the sense of, I think, how most people would envision a slow movement. There's always this beautiful forward motion. It rolls. It rolls beautifully.
I think he knew he had to breathe.
Occasionally.
Well, that provides an adequate reasoning for making sure that you show up for this concert, which is going to be the second of the chamber soiree performances by members of the Spokane Symphony Orchestra, including my guests in the studio today, Lynn Feller-Marshall and Clinton Webb. And I'm sure it's going to be a fabulous program, and I hope that you find some time to enjoy. Do you find that you get to do the program twice? And do you find that you can indeed have insights while you are performing as well as during your rehearsal period?
Definitely. Definitely. I will still remind myself of just about anything that I need to remind myself of between performances. So if we have three performances, it's never going to be the same the second or third time, because I'm always reminded of, oh my goodness, that's with the oboe, that's right. And you don't necessarily remember that until you're in the moment. And then the next night, if you have the luxury of only one night apart, it's even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would, just to continue what Lynn was saying, this is actually sort of one of my elevator pitches for classical music as like a genre. I would say not just in this context, but even an orchestral context. Every night that we play, I'm finding new things in the music that excite me or interest me. And I think what's special about this music that we play is how much it rewards repeated performance and repeated listening. Each time I play a Brahms symphony, each time I play a Mozart wind octet, I find something new and interesting and think, wow, gosh, that's really clever, or man, that's really beautiful, or I didn't know the second oboe did that. I'm just excited to get to contribute to this.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the mark of great music, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It keeps evolving in our own minds, and we keep discovering more of this. Limitless discoveries to be made, and I'm sure that if you're there for the Chamber Soiree program, that will be your experience as well. Just lots and lots to learn and lots to love. Well, this has been from the studio presentation here on SPR Classical. My thanks to my guests today. And to find out more about the Symphony Soiree programs and all their concerts, go to SpokaneSymphony.org, and your searcher will be rewarded with lots and lots and lots of great information. Okay, let's go out with some Mozart, why don't we? Let's go back to the Grand Partita. This is the second last movement, which is a theme and variations. Again, our musicians are Collegium Aurum. Thank you. Thank you.